Chapter 11. Death by Bunny. Below Foul Manor, and a little to the left. Nobody, human or fairy, had been declared dead more times than Mulch Diggums, and it was a record he was inordinately proud of. In Mulch's eyes, being declared dead by the LEP was just a less embarrassing way for them to admit that he had escaped for the umpteenth time. In the Sozzled Parrot Fugitives Bar, LEP death certificates were printed up and tacked to the Wall of Heroes. Mulch had fond memories of the very first time he had faked his own death to throw police officers off his trail. My God, could that really be over 200 years ago now? Time flies faster than wind through a bum flap, as Grandmother used to say. Bless her. He'd been on a job with his cousin Nord on Haven's Moneyed Mountain, when the homeowner had come home unexpectedly from the convention in Atlantis, where he was supposed to be living it up on taxpayers' gold for more than 2 days. I hate it when they come home early, thought Mulch. Why do people do that when there's a very good chance they will find burglars in their living rooms? Anyway, the homeowner happened to be ex-law enforcement and the registered owner of a buzz baton, which he had used on the dwarf cousins with great gusto. Nord managed to escape into their tunnel, but Mulch had been forced to clutch his heart, faking a cardiac, and then crash through a window, playing dead all the way down to the river below. Corpsing was the hard part, remembered Mulch. There's nothing more unnatural than keeping your arms slack when they want to be pinwheeling. LEP had interviewed the ex-law enforcement homeowner, who had emphatically claimed,
"Yeah, I killed him. It was an accident, of course. I only meant to maim that dwarf, then kick him senseless. But you can put that sucker down as dead. Nobody can corpse for 3 stories."
And so Mulch Diggums was declared deceased for the first time. There would be 12 more official occasions on which people mistakenly thought Mulch had flown the final coop. And he was, unbeknownst to himself, tunneling toward an unofficial one at this very moment. His instructions were simple enough. Dig a parallel tunnel to the one he had recently collapsed, sneak into the crashed Cupid, and then steal any weapons that were in the locker. Dig, sneak, and steal. 3 of Mulch's 4 favourite verbs. I do not know why I'm doing this, Mulch thought as he tunnelled. I should be heading down to the crust to find myself a nice crevice. They say that Opal's death wave will only kill humans, but why take such irresponsible chances with the great gift of life? Mulch knew that this reasoning was a crock of troll patties, but he found he could dig better if he was annoyed, even if he was the object of his own annoyance. And so the dwarf fumed silently as he churned up through the earth toward the shuttle wreck. 20 feet up and 30 yards to the south, Opal Cowboy was sinking her hands into the deep algebraic enchantments of the second berserker lock. Symbols wrapped themselves like glowworms around her fingers and surrendered their power one by one as she discovered their secrets. Some could be beaten into submission by the sheer force of her black magic, but others had to be coaxed with sly hexes or magical tickles.
I am close, she thought. I can feel the earth's strength.
The wave of death would be in the form of geothermal energy, she presumed, and would be drawn from the entire planet's resources, and not just the shallow hydrothermal reservoirs. This would put quite a dent in the world's reserves, and could theoretically plunge Earth into another ice age.
We'll survive, she thought callously. I have some nice heated boots in storage.
The work was challenging, but manageable, and it gave Opal some satisfaction to know that she was the only fairy alive who had done enough research on the intricacies of ancient magics to open the second lock. The first had been simple. That had required little more than a blast of black magic. But the second needed an encyclopedic knowledge of spellcraft.
That techno-fool Foley would never have managed this, not in a million years.
Opal was not aware of it, but so self-satisfied was she at that moment that she rolled her shoulders and made a purring noise.
Everything is going so well.
This plan had been outlandish, even by her standards, but, unlikely or not, all the elements were falling into place. Her initial thought had been to sacrifice her younger self and use the ill-gotten power to escape from the deeps. It then occurred to her that this power would have to be jettisoned almost immediately to prevent it from eating her alive. So why not put it to good use? Opportunity had presented itself to Opal when her younger self had made telepathic contact. One morning, Opal had been deep in a cleansing coma and ping! Suddenly there was a voice in her head, calling her sister and asking for help. It had occurred to her briefly that she could in fact be insane, but little by little the information filtered through. A younger Opal had followed Artemis Fowl from the past. "I have no memory of this," Opal realized. "Therefore my younger self must have been captured and sent back with these events wiped from her mind. Unless the timeline had split, then anything was possible." Opal was surprised to find her younger self a little whiny, even boring. Had she really been so self-absorbed? "It's all me, thought Opal. "I injured my leg in the explosion. My magic is fading. I need to get back to my own time." None of this was in the least helpful to Opal, stuck in her prison. "What you need to do is get me out of here," she broadcast to her younger self. "Then we can see to your injuries and send you home." But how to accomplish this? That darned centaur Foley had incarcerated her in the most technologically advanced cell in the world. The answer was simple. "I have to force them to release me, because the alternative would be simply too horrible to even contemplate." Opal wrestled with the problem for several minutes before she accepted that the younger Opal would have to be sacrificed. And once that piece of the puzzle had clunked into place, she quickly built the rest of the plan around it. Pip and Kip were two sleeper gnomes who worked in the civil service. The council had sent them to do an audit of one of her factory's accounts a few years ago, and Opal had hypnotized them using forbidden runes and dark magic. All it took was a phone call from young Opal to activate their loyalty, even at the cost of one or both of their lives. She broadcast instructions to young Opal, telling her exactly how to set up the fake kidnapping, and telling her how to use the traces of dark magic still left in her system to find the legendary Berserker Gate. The gate was the way back to the past. Or at least that was the story Opal sent out. Younger Opal could not know, but the instructions for Pip and Kip were very specific. For a reason. Hidden inside the words was a simple code that Opal had implanted along with their loyalty bonds. If young Opal had thought to write down all the letters that corresponded to prime numbers, she would have found a far more sinister message than the one she thought she was delivering. "Kill the hostage when time runs out." You had to keep it simple for civil servants. Everything had worked out exactly as she had foreseen, except for the arrival of Fowl and Short. But in a way, that too was a stroke of good fortune. Now she could kill them. Up close and personal. "Every cloud has a silver lining." Suddenly, Opal felt her stomach churn as a wave of nausea assailed her. The pixie's first thought was that the black magic was struggling with her own antibodies, but then she realized that the source was external. "Something offends my enhanced magical senses," she thought. "Something over there." The wrecked shuttle stood beyond the circle of warriors that stood guard over their queen. "Below the shuttle, something is coated in a substance that sickens me." It was that cursed dwarf, sticking his bum flap in where it didn't belong, and not for the first time. Opal scowled. How many times must she bear humiliation from a flatulent dwarf? It was intolerable. "Sent to retrieve weapons from the ship, no doubt." Opal raised her gaze 15 degrees to the shuttle. Crushed though the cupid was, her sixth sense could see an aura of magic winding around the fuselage like a fat snake. This particular wavelength would not help to open the second lock, but it could certainly provide enough juice for an extremely visible demonstration of her power. Opal withdrew a hand from the sluggishly heaving rock and formed the fingers into a claw, arranging the molecules to attract any energy inside the cupid. The power left the vehicle in a glowing morass, shrinking the cupid to a wizened wreck and hovering in the air over the awed berserkers.
"See what your queen can accomplish!" she cried, eyes bright.
Her tiny fingers twirled, manipulating the energy into a sharp wedge, which she sent crashing through the earth to where the dwarf labored. There was a solid thump, and a spume of dirt and rocks jetted skyward, leaving a scorched crater in their wake. Opal returned her attention to the second lock.
"Can you see the dwarf?"
she asked Oro, who stood peering into the hole.
"I see one foot and some blood. The foot is jittering about, so he's still alive. I'll go and bring him up."
"No," said Opal, "you do not leave Mummy's sight. Send the earth creatures to kill him."
If the fairy bonds had not had Oro's free will in such a tight bind, he would have taken Opal to task for repeatedly disrespecting her elders. But as it was, even the thought of reprimanding his queen cost him a severe stomach cramp. When the pain passed, he raised two fingers to his lips to whistle for his diggers. He found out that it was not an easy thing to whistle with strange fingers, and all that emerged from his mouth was a watery, slobbering noise.
"Don't know that signal, chief,"
said Yeshui Khan, who had once been a pretty handy axe gnome.
"Is that lunch break?"
"No!"
shouted Oro.
"I need my diggers! Gather round!"
A dozen rabbits hopped quickly to bunch at his feet. Their little whiskers quivered with anticipation of finally seeing some action.
"Get the dwarf," Oro ordered. "I would say bring him back alive, but you do not really have the skills for parley."
The rabbits thumped their hind legs in agreement.
"So the order is simple," said Oro with a touch of regret. "Kill him."
The rabbits piled en masse into the hole, eagerly scrabbling toward the injured dwarf.
"Death by bunny," thought Oro. "Not a nice way to go."
Oro did not wish to look. Dwarfs were part of the fairy world, and in other circumstances they could have been allies. From behind him, he heard the crunch of bone and the rattled whoosh of earth collapsing. Oro shuddered. He would face a troll any day before a bunch of carnivorous rabbits. On the dais, Opal felt a load lift from her heart as another enemy suffered.
"Soon it will be your turn to suffer, Foley," she thought. "But death would be too easy for you. Perhaps you are already suffering. Perhaps your lovely wife has already opened the gift my little gnomes sent to her."
Opal sang a little ditty as she worked on the second lock.
"Hey, hey, hey, this is the day. Things are gonna go my way."
Opal was not consciously aware of it, but this was a popular song from the Pip and Kip show.